summer. I'm like, okay, I only have 6 credits left. I'm so close. And I've done all the hard things. So I'm going to take something really easy. I'll take a 100-level class. It'll be fantastic. And I'm going to do distance ed, so I don't even have to go anywhere. And it was the hardest course I've ever taken in my whole life. And I've never worked harder for a worse grade. And I did pass. So I took a course on the Introduction to World Religions. It was really hard. And I think, like, I thought, you know, this will be good. It'll be interesting for me, you know, like, I know a little bit about religions, right? Like, I go to church. That counts for something. But apparently not in the academic world. It counts for nothing. So the bulk of the course was writing papers. And more papers. And, like, I got the assignment list. I'm like, this is great. There's only 5 assignments. I made the right choice. Each assignment was write 2 essays. Like, that's not 1 assignment. That's 2. Yeah. Let's look at that clear. And then it was like, okay, take these 2 religions you don't know anything about with all this terminology. So you probably should know about it. Read about 300 papers or 300 pages and then compare them. So I learned a lot very quickly. It was not enough to keep my GPA up. But that's okay because I passed and C's get degrees. So I'd actually like to start with a song, and throughout the course of my sharing more about this experience, it might sort of become evident why this song has sort of kept playing through my head. And it's a song that I heard, like maybe 4 years ago. I think it's about 4 years old, and Mike has the lyrics and Tim has the song, so I'll let you listen.
Says that mine's a lie. If God's on your side,
I think that song speaks to maybe what we might know, like, on the surface of other religions. Like, when you turn on the TV, because unfortunately the TV is, like, how we learn everything these days, right? So you turn it on and you see people fighting and everybody's upset and everybody thinks they're right and everybody else is wrong. And this is not an original thought for me. I probably stole this from a movie, Tim. But like the idea that you have two football teams, right? And they're both praying, and they both want to win. And it's like, well, clearly my God is better than your God. We'll win, right? Mm-hmm. Or even if it's the same God, God loves us more, so we'll win. And this idea of pitting beliefs against each other. So I thought, okay, well, I'll get into this course, and maybe I'll understand a bit more about it. I'm going to try to go kind of just through the course syllabus so I stay organized and I don't forget something. And if at any point if you have a question or something that it makes you think of, because there's so many, like, really thoughtful people here, just stop and just say what you have to say. The course starts with, like, what is religion? Okay, which I thought, okay, that's okay. Like, I've given this some thought. I know what religion is, right? And I thought it was, okay, a group of people come together who have shared beliefs, and then that informs the way they live. Okay, and maybe they have a book to guide them, or maybe there's a person that guides them. But apparently that's not really it. That's not the whole story. And what it starts with is this belief in an ultimate reality, that there's something greater out there than us. And that's the single thing that sort of defines, is this a religion? There's this ultimate reality. Because not every, like, even within one belief system, not everybody has the same beliefs or the same practices. But all those different traditions believe that there's something greater than just us, just now. So that's where it starts with. So right away you're like, okay, I don't know anything. I'm so sorry I've taken this class. But it really opens up your view, right? Because if that's what binds us, then maybe that is more to the heart of what is important, right? Discovering what is this reality. And we might think of it in terms of heaven or hell or the voice of God or speaking with God. But if we all have this experience that there's more to it than just us, to me that like it's freeing, you know? We're not so confined to the way we act or the way we think. So I liked how that opened things up, but it also made it more complicated because I had never really thought that way before. From there, the course moved on to two religions. Moved on to indigenous religions, which it's like, it's so crazy that that's like one tiny portion. Like, are you kidding me? It's like the catch-all. It's like, okay, here's everybody that doesn't fit indigenous beliefs, right? So we compare all of that with Hinduism, okay? And that's kind of the point that the course is making, is that when we think of Hindu beliefs, like, and I didn't know anything about Hinduism, you know, like I knew The Simpsons, Apu, and like Vishnu, right? And I was not very informed. Like, I knew, I was like, this seems like a really good, rich tradition, and people are very nice to each other, but I knew nothing about it, okay? And what the big thing that the course helped me to understand and navigate is that it's not like one religion. Hinduism, like people who might identify as Hindu, believe so many different things. And this is maybe not the correct way to phrase it, but there's a bit of like picking and choosing, I think, that happens. Because Hinduism, it didn't start by like one person or one thing. It was a region or an area of India. And similar beliefs and practices arose out of that because it's in the same general area, the same time. And there are some shared texts, some shared sacred texts. But just because you say you're Hindu doesn't mean you necessarily believe or do the same thing as this Hindu. Like, totally different.
Someone would make the exact same argument with Christianity, right?
Absolutely, right? And that's so obvious to us as Christians. We're like, well, of course, you know. But I think that it's just this Western belief that we're in, you know, because this is where we live and we're Christians. So they're the other. And they're like this group. That's their group. They're Hindu. But they're not. And it's just as diverse as saying indigenous belief is one thing. And I really wish we had gotten more into indigenous beliefs, because the things that I've learned, primarily through the education system and getting to know different people in the Aboriginal community, like it's so impossibly rich and diverse, that to see it reduced to a chapter of a textbook was like almost offensive, you know? And for some reason that didn't offend me about Christianity. I was like, well, that's fine. I can handle that. But just like the broad spectrum of the whole globe, I'd like to learn maybe more about that. Maybe that's where I go next.
And it's ironic that the term indigenous would be the most decentralized word out of all of those religions,
isn't
right?
It?
Like, you can point to geographic spaces for all the rest of the ones that get way more time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah, this one word is just for everyone who just doesn't fit with all of those.
Exactly. And it's interesting, too, like, completely different parts of the globe. And ostensibly, like, these people under the indigenous umbrella, like, thousands of years ago, never met. But there's so much similarity in thought and practice. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, too.
There's something that, this isn't an official term, but I've often thought of my travels up north, it's like, it's the religion of the land.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever taken human geography, you'll notice that landscapes play a huge role in a person's culture. And so I've always found it interesting to sort of see the people of the land. It makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
People with strong roots would help us.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe as like all the labels that I have on myself, like Canadian and Christian and all these things, they really, like, in a lot of ways separate me from the land, you know? Like, you have to purposefully work on getting back to the land, and like things like the seasons, you know, we just want it to be summer all the time, and I do, I want summer all the time, but it's okay, because I can just create it by going inside, right? And I can wear a t-shirt any time of the year that I want. Like, the seasons don't really mean a whole lot, even. You know, I can get strawberries from California whenever I want.
And there's something very northern about it, too. Like, sometimes I think, you know, European culture and history has been so distinct in its sort of divorce from the land in some ways.
Yeah.
Very head and not...
Yeah.
Very, and when I was in the Philippines, I remember them asking me, what's the one difference that you see? Like, tell us something that's really the difference between your culture and our culture.
Mm.
And I said to them, the thing I noticed every day the most is in the north, we have a strict divorce from the outside. And I remember explaining to them how doors go.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
They never heard such a thing.
Yeah.
And I said, that's because even the air from the outside is not allowed inside.
Huh?
And in the Philippines, they talked about homelessness, how homelessness is bad, but you can always go sleep under a banana tree, you know,
yeah.
And you can always go grab a mango. Like, there's food, and it's not your enemy the way it necessarily has to be in the north, and that leads to different ways, like you say. In the north, you're not going to be as connected to the land as your land. The land hates you, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least we didn't end up that way.
Yeah.
I just caught the end of that where you said the land hates you.
Well,
sometimes it feels like that.
Well, contrary to that, Mike, you're going up north, and you're still connected to the land.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I'm not saying I'm connected to the land.
I see it in other people. Yeah.
Well, interestingly, when the Europeans came over, they didn't know how to handle the land, and they needed help in order to have the land not hate them
to
the point of death, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they took advantage of that, you know, knowledge that they got and the relationship that they built, and continued to live disconnected from the land in order to circumvent or overtake the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm taking a course in the summer right now, and we're reading about the idea of what it means to be healthy. And for a Cree group that we're studying about, being connected to the land means being healthy. It's a huge part of their identity of health. And for me, my concept of health has nothing to do with the land, right? Like, and so to see the different way to look at how you live and how it works its way into religion is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That was another big thing that came out of the Indigenous talk in the course was this idea of being separate from the land, right? And... When you talk about, like, I'm going to harm the environment, I'm doing it harm, you know, it's very easy for us to distance ourselves, but for so many other beliefs, it's, no, like, I'm hurting myself. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Like, I'm very literally hurting myself when I do this.
I wonder, too, if one of the things that causes the distance, again, this is just me doing sociological theorizing, I guess. This guy would probably clear up a bit more, but... to get away from the land, you need really large hierarchies of organization, right? Like, generally, in indigenous tribes, you find a lot more anarchy, a lot more small groups. You know, when you get a king and his minions building large castles and our idea of progress, you're able to get, through technology, farther and farther and farther away from the land.
Mm-hmm.
But whether that's good or bad, I mean, it just is, but that's certainly... Those hierarchies of control take us farther and farther away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you find that when you have those God moments and you don't feel God's presence, you are outside. You are part of the land.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
The trees whispering.
Doing media for the past couple of years, there was a period before we got this branding where I had to think to myself, okay, I got to find a background for a song. And it was always this beautiful landscape, like every single one. Teared or like raindrops in the stream or something. It was always...
All natural.
Yeah, there's just this unspoken rules.
Yeah. So that... Yeah. So those were the first two papers. Ray has something to add.
Yeah, a few years ago I took advanced studies in mysticism at the University of Manitoba, and I was extremely disappointed in the course material. But I managed to get a book from the University Library on the mysticism of the world religions. And by then I'd already concluded that the world religions were curse on mankind. Anyway, instead of reading this book on mysticism, it prompted me to place myself as a man, let's say 35,000 years ago, way before Hinduism, Judaism, and all the religions. And I'm just a human being who's being a sense of awareness, and I'm living probably in a tropical place. Started, apparently. And I started thinking, okay, I'm this man. What's around me? And one of the things that being a thinking human being, I realized that the most important thing in my life, apart from my family and that, but in terms of the land, nature around me, was this bright thing that comes up over there every morning and sets over there every night. How important it is to me. And from there I went on to think about the other things that are important to my life as this ancient human being. And from there I realized that very easy I realized that this thing that travels over my head every day and gives me warmth, sometimes too much, but it's way bigger than I am. And I better be on good terms. And my thinking led me into all those areas about what do I need to be on good terms in the world. And from that I realized that I can see now where the gods of the Greeks and the Romans all came about. And they were only like 5 or 6,000 years ago. What happened 35,000 years ago? And that it wasn't a religion, or it might have been a religion for one, or was it my personal spirituality, or was me trying to find a place in this land that I find myself in? And of course, at times, sitting around that bonfire cooking a piece of raw meat, these kind of discussions might take place amongst my fellow men. And I didn't take it any further than that. To me, that's the beginning of spirituality. And of course, at some point, somebody with too much time on his hands says, I know the truth, and here's how it's got to be. And all of a sudden, we've got religion.
Or I kind of think, just imagining, somebody has a genuine vision or something from God.
Yes.
People give that person the power, but then they formalize it, and the ones who come after that person who don't have any, you know, suddenly it gets hardened and formalized into the guy who once saw something or the woman who once saw something. We must figure out what that meant. Because that we continue to do now, right?
Mm-hmm. See, there you get into the, when you study mysticism, you'll find that there are people who quite truly believe that they did get something directly from God. But then there are those who...
want to write it down.
But there are some who will suffer from mental disease who think they also got something from God. There we go.
Yeah. No, that's
true. So all of that was one paper.
All of that was one paper.
Yeah. Really, you know, the umbrella again of indigenous belief and Hindu beliefs, it's like, wow, there's so much, and that's just a scratching on the surface, right? Like you said, there's so much. The next two that we talked about, were there was one that I had never heard of before, Jainism. Okay, and like there are millions of Jains out in the world, and not just that one. So Jainism and Buddhism. So I feel like we sort of, you know, we kind of hear about Buddhism, but you know, we see Buddha, and we think about meditating, and maybe like a lotus blossom. And I'm not sure if it goes much farther in like how much the average person maybe knows about Buddhism. And the principle that we had to think about with Jainism and Buddhism was something called ahimsa, which is a principle of nonviolence. So this is very big in both belief systems. Jainism, like geographically, it's more northern than Hinduism, okay? So closer to Asia. And it develops sort of the same time period. And I'm looking at Trevor because Trevor's like really intently staring at me, and I feel like if I make a mistake, he might. So Jainism is like roughly like the same time period, but not it's not the same thing. It's more codified. And to me, like when I think of all the religions I learned about, I think like, wow, like. The Jains, like, they believe some very different things from me. And you know, and I think of words like crazy, and it's not crazy, it's just crazy to me, right? I'm like, that's so crazy, why would they think that? Like, for example, when we think of the soul, I think we think of it more like ethereal and, like, more like an idea, okay? But for the Jains, the soul is a very physical thing, okay? So you have a soul. Everybody has one. Like, as much as you have a heart, you have a soul. And this soul, if you do something bad, and we often hear the word karma, but karma means different things to different people. So for the Jains, karma, if you do something bad, you attract bad karma. It's sort of like a magnet. And it literally is another substance, material, that dirties your soul. So you're like, you're literally making your soul dirty. And so for them, you should not do anything violent towards anything ever because it makes your soul dirty. And you can't really clean your soul off. Like you can, but it's very hard. And if your soul is too dirty, then you will never reach nirvana, which is like this ultimate reality, right? Where you're enlightened. And everything makes sense, and you can stop the cycle of rebirth. Because they also believe that you will, like that, because your soul is a physical thing. When you die, it has to physically go somewhere, and it goes to another being. And the more karma you have, the harder it is for your soul to go anywhere good. So, like to me, it seems very fear-based, but it might not seem that way to a Jain person. Like that might just be my perspective on it. But it struck me how very literal everything is. And even just the hierarchy of like what we might call sin or doing something bad. Like if I harm a person with five senses, so if I hit or like kill one of you, that's really bad. That's a lot of bad karma. But even when I drink water, there could be some tiny organism in there that I'm inadvertently harming when I drink this water. So, like, some Jains will put cloth screens over their water when they drink. Because they don't want any of this bad karma. Or when they're walking, they won't go out at night because then you can't see bugs. And if they go out during the day, they'll bring a broom and sweep everything away. Because they don't want to harm anything. And even when they're eating vegetables, they understand that this is, like, just bad karma that they have to take on to live, but it's still not a good thing to do. So, for me, I am very glad I'm not a Jain. Like, that, it just sounds, like, exhausting to have to think about this all the time, but, like, again, like anything, I'm sure there's a lot of diversity, and you know, not everybody is quite as strict with their beliefs. And Buddhism, nonviolence, is like the same idea. You don't want to harm anybody, but it's not that you will physically make yourself dirty. It's more about detaching yourself. So a Buddhist, from what I understand, the more you are attached to people, like say, like I love Brent and I love Miles, but because of that love, it actually causes me suffering, right? So suffering is the bad thing. So if I detach myself from loving people, then I won't suffer as much. And they won't suffer as much. And, like, talk about two totally different ideas on nonviolence. And the idea of, like, that I should not love somebody is so fundamentally bizarre to me. Like, it just makes absolutely no sense. But for millions of people, it does. Millions of people attempt to distance themselves from things and people. And they believe that's the way to this ultimate reality. Yeah. Yes, because it's more like you have to work towards everything, right? It's all about your efforts that you put in.
It reminds me a lot of Judaism from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed. Judaism is different now.
Mm-hmm.
But the rules and things like that. It's just,
I'm going to try to go a little bit faster because I looked at the clock and it's 7:30.
That's okay. He's only singing
two songs. Half of one.
Yeah.
The next two are very easy. But I'll tell you why. The next two are Taoism and Confucianism. But the reason that they're easy is because that's when I got pregnant and I had to sleep a lot.
There
and,
you go.
And so I never wrote the paper.
Swatter clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, this is an acceptable loss in the course. I can't get it done. So I did some of the reading, but like, you know, it doesn't stick unless you really grapple with what you have to do. Apparently that's okay, according to the beliefs.
Taoism is all...
Yeah.
There's like opposites, right?
Yeah.
Confucianism is like very law-heavy, and it's the Old Testament. And Taoism I often really, really like. In Japan, I got exposed to it through a friend who was a Taoist. And so much of Taoism smells like Jesus to me.
Mm.
And so much of Confucianism smells like the Old Testament. So I would say Taoism sort of completes Confucianism, but it's very much like... if you don't feel like it, just chill. It's going to be okay.
It's
There's
okay.
grace
yeah.
for that.
Well, that's good. So those are actually the next two, are Christianity and Judaism. And so I finally got to those in the course, and I was like, okay, yes, I can nail this one. This is easy, and I'll blow through it. And it wasn't. Because I felt like I knew sort of where it was going, but I didn't know how to get to that part when I was writing. And the topic was orthodoxy, which is belief, like what do you believe, the practice of belief, and orthopraxy, which is the belief part. So directly pitting practice and belief against each other. And the idea was that Judaism is more based on practice, what you do, and Christianity is based more on what you believe. And I had never thought about it that way, which... like, looking at it now, I'm like, well, it's so obvious. Why did I not think that? But I had never thought that before. And so, I felt like I sort of, like, as a Christian, I think a lot of us feel like, yeah, I know about Judaism because I know about the Old Testament guys. Like, I know what I'm talking about, right? But then I talked with a colleague of mine who is Jewish, and... like has had her own journey with that and renounced it and became a Marxist, and then like now she's a practicing Jew, and so she had a lot to say. But the biggest thing that I took away from talking with her is she's like, no, like you're right. When God says you do it, you do it. It's not because you believe God is right, and because you believe He's right, you do it. you do it because that's what God told you to do. And I had never thought about it that way. Because in my head, I'm thinking, well, okay, we have the same God, right? So if we believe in the God, then because I believe, then I'll do the thing he tells me to do, right? But it was not, that's not how she saw it at all. And we had a very different view of the Ten Commandments. She was saying, that was like one of the main things she cited, like, when God says, honor your mother and father, you do it, because God told you to do it. I said, well, I always thought the purpose of the Ten Commandments is kind of to show you that you can't do everything, and that you're going to sin no matter what, and so you need Jesus. She's like, no, they're there to tell you how to live. You follow those Ten Commandments. I'm like, but I can't. She's like, but you do it. Yeah. You know, and that was sort of like a crux that I found, like, okay, this, we obviously think very different things about this. And she had never considered that the Ten Commandments would show you that you never measure up. She had never thought of it that way. Now, I don't think I blew her mind as much as she blew mine. But it was, I'm so glad I talked with her about that. And I think this is the part in the course where I really realized, okay, it really isn't just about belief. Because in my head, even though in the beginning they're like, okay, it's not about belief and practice, it's about an ultimate reality. I was like, yeah, yeah, okay. But you believe there's an ultimate reality. Right? You still believe this. And no, for so many people in the world, they don't. It's not that they believe there's an ultimate reality. They have been told. They do these rituals because in some way it supports this ultimate reality. And I'm really happy that I'm in a belief-based faith because I feel like it suits really well who I am, and it gives us room to explore what we believe, right? Because the world changes and beliefs change, and this idea, like, once we write it down, like, that's it, and the rigidity that comes in and all that stuff, to me, is, like, suffocating, and I can't handle that. So I'm glad I try to follow the Ten Commandments. I try to be good, but I'm glad that we have this grace and it's not, you know, works-based, and I don't know. What do you guys think about Judaism and Christianity?
Sounds like there's a lot of Marxism in there.
Yeah, there probably was.
Yeah.
And there's I often hear, I've had Jewish friends who say, mm-hmm. exactly what you're saying, but it rhymes with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Is that it's kind of an advantage. Like when we lose our belief, mm-hmm. we turn into raging atheists. You know, I've had so many Christian friends who grew up fundamentalists decide that that was wrong, and then they're just fundamentalist atheists, right? Mm-hmm. They flip it to the other side. Whereas Jewish guys, often the rabbi will say, well, Rabbi, I don't believe in God. So, just keep coming to the synagogue and keep doing the things we've done. We've done this for 5,000 years now. We're not, you know, it's not just about that.
Yeah.
And which, to us, is kind of like, yeah, it is just about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you stop believing, it's over.
Yeah.
But, and maybe more so in Protestant circles where mm-hmm. we don't, like, at least if you're a Catholic or Orthodox, you still go light a candle or whatever. But when we in Protestants stop believing,
like, that's
game's over.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And our system is set up to make them have it, right? Because if you don't believe, then don't come.
We
don't want you just practicing.
Yeah.
We actually don't want that.
And we even say that, don't we?
We do say that a lot. We want your heart. We don't want just the action.
Yeah, has a good side and a bad side.
Yeah.
My mentor is Jewish, and he's also an atheist. And he was explaining to me that the way he understands it in Judaism, God is not the answer. God is the question. Mm-hmm. Judaism is seeking the answer. Mm. And you'll never find it. Something like that. So even though he's not he's an atheist, he still finds a world of wonder.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, Judaism is also a culture as well as mm-hmm. a people. Mm-hmm. Or it's a religion as mm-hmm. well as a people. And so there's sort of that. Whereas Christianity is religion, but not necessarily people mm-hmm. at all. So,
Super evangelicalism.
Mennonite now, you can eat an atheist Mennonite pretty close, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, as long as you keep eating raw food.
You're right.
Before I leave that, though, I just don't want to forget that I really, really enjoyed seeing how much in Judaism there was, like, right from the beginning of Judaism, there was so much commentary on, like, on the text, and it wasn't like you believe the Old Testament or you don't. And there's so many different interpretations,
right.
And I never understood that before this, so I really enjoyed learning that.
It's a discussion right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You can get that sense. I mean, if you read some different Jewish novels, you get a sense of that lively, like you get a group of Jewish guys together and they're fighting over the scriptures.
Yeah.
Like it is lively. And you get that sense when Jesus is in the temple and he's teaching and all of a sudden it turns into this discussion. Like that's there and it's live and they fight over it because they love it. Like it's,
mm-hmm.
it's just part of their identity. It's part
mm-hmm.
of their
matters, yeah.
And,
yeah.
and they learn to love that dialogue.
And I wish we could maybe like retain some of that, you know.
I don't think that.
No?
No.
I just feel. I
think of the conversations.
Well, no, the height in Jewish debate is to answer a question with another question.
That's right. Yeah,
which is what I said.
I don't know. I think whenever I like contemplate other religions, I have such a deep respect for them because they are so focused on doing those good
mm-hmm.
things,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I find discipline,
yeah.
and I find sometimes
yeah.
thinking that, like, as Christians, we can be so lazy in that
yeah.
because we do have that grace, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost a fallback, and
yeah.
so whenever I study religions or whatever,
yeah.
I'm always like, man, like, they've got something there
yeah.
that I think everyone can learn from, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I actually had a friend, she lives in the States now, but she said she was going through that struggle, and her father's a pastor, and so she's grown up as a Christian pastor kid, and she went to a church that was Christian, I can't remember if it was Catholic, or I'm not sure, but they actually, for a section of time, they stood the whole service
mm.
to get out of that laziness. Mm. Which I was like, whoa, like that blew my mind. And she was like, yeah, it was really hard. But for her, it was something that kind of struck a chord.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, she obviously didn't stay at that church. It wasn't the right fit. But, like, it just stayed with her thinking that, like, man, like, sometimes we have to pull up our socks and do the mundane things
mm-hmm.
over and over. Like, I just don't know why it's so hard for us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
hard.
Like, in India, there are people, in like it's a very regular thing that part of your faith journey in some Hindu areas would be that you just renounce everything, like including clothing.
Okay.
And you wander around and you may or may not have a bowl, and that's it. And you rely upon everybody else to take care of you. And it's not like you're burdening them. They're happy to take care of you.
Mm.
And that's how they, like, they give,
yeah.
right? And can you imagine somebody doing that here? Like, not only is it completely impractical, because you would die.
Yeah, very southern idea.
Yeah. You would die. But would you just, you know, give for
mm-hmm.
these people that have renounced everything? I don't know.
Yeah.
What we're talking before, it's come up a few times about the laziness,
mm-hmm.
the potential laziness of our faith and or the actions of our faith and how if you, you know, stop believing, you're pretty much encouraged just to not come anymore kind of thing. And
mm-hmm.
I found that was when I was struggling, I guess the height of my depression and when I was going through treatment for Hep C and just feeling like crap all the time, that's like there was that temptation to stop, but deep down it was like, no, I'm going to continue these practices because I know there's redemption in it.
Mm-hmm.
And redemption, more like salvation. I don't know what exactly the word is, but I found God using me when I decided that I was just going to slog through it, and I wasn't, if someone asked, how are you doing, I wasn't going to say fine, mm-hmm. I was going to say crappy, mm-hmm. and if they really wanted to actually know, I wasn't going to hide it, I wasn't going to put on a show, I was coming to church because I believe in God, but I'm struggling, but I'm not going to come and put on a show of doing church
right.
that our culture is very fond of. And I found God using me most in that time, speaking to other people. Like people telling me afterwards, like, you strengthened my faith during that time. And I think the culture of Christianity and the practice of Christianity have become so disjointed mm-hmm. in our culture that we lose out on the power mm-hmm. because of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell a story that I have felt pushed to tell this story. It happened to me again. It happened to me 20 years ago when I was taking heart surgery and I went into it feeling free. And I know that. Your heart, and then they don't do away at the end later, and they fixed you. And I haven't told the story because people will think you're crazy. But I actually was up on the ceiling, and looking down at myself, I saw all these people in a green screen now. And then I had this sense of incredible peace and presence with me and a light, not a tunnel or anything, and a belief sense. And after things were better, I chose to be baptized in my belief sense because there is a God. I believe it was Jesus. And it took that to make me. He's real. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just think you're crazy when you tell stories. It really happened.
Mm-hmm. But there's Google NDEs,
yeah.
Near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. You're in very,
God,
very
right.
good company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I have no doubt now.
Yeah.
Even though I don't live it all the time, I know that.
Yeah.
And I just not been ready to talk. Because I think I'm crazy.
But every time you do, everybody else has some experience that's reaffirmed for them.
Yes.
That's
so
like, okay, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
You
know? Nobody tells me these things. I'm the only one. Nobody can tell me. But you walk around thinking
yeah.
you're kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I even tried to tell my doctor. So, but it's real. Yeah.
You don't think you're crazy.
No.
There
really is a God. Yeah. Who cares for us?
Okay, there's only two more left. Well, we're getting really close to the end of things, so we might even be over now. The last two that we studied were Islam and Sikhism, which to me seem like the fieriest ones. Like when you turn on the news, like everybody's so angry. So it was really refreshing through the texts to go back to the history of each of those and to see that it was completely the opposite of that. And it's not let's just start with Islam. You know, like in the news we've heard there's this woman in Sudan who committed apostasy where she said, I'm not Muslim, I don't believe. And suddenly she's being put to death, right? Or the threat of being put to death because you don't believe. And if you go back to Muhammad, that's not at all what he was saying. Like, in any way. And you hear these rational Islam people speaking about it. And it's true. Like, that's not what Muhammad was saying. And in fact, like, historically, they've been way more tolerant than Christians. Like, way more tolerant. So, like, when Islam started, it just, like, ballooned out of nowhere. Suddenly, everybody was converting. And I think there's very few religions that grew as fast and as furiously. And it wasn't because they were, like, going to kill you if you didn't believe. That wasn't it at all. It was, like, it was a welcoming. And it was actually, as well, integrating people's cultures into the belief. It was like, okay, well, this is already your culture. Well, you know, you don't have to change everything. We're going to work with that, you know. And so, in some ways, that's been very good. In some ways, I think that's where the extremism comes from now. Because you have these Shia laws where scholars will go back and say, well, Muhammad maybe didn't preach for or against this one thing, but he allowed it to happen. So then we're going to allow this other thing to happen here, and we'll allow this thing to happen here, because Muhammad didn't say either way. And I think that's where a lot of the really bad extreme stuff comes from. But really, it was so all-encompassing. And I think that, you know, and we sort of have like this lineage of like Judaism, Christianity, Islam. And if you look at it that way, like chronologically, as Christians, I think we have a lot that we could learn from Islam that doesn't mean we don't have to be, aren't Christian anymore. But I think that they've brought some of these practices back that we maybe have forgotten about. And Sikhism is back in India, okay? So it's sort of where we started. And so now, like, 4,000 years after the beginning of Hinduism, we get Sikhism, and there's one person, and I can't remember his name. And he's sort of grouping everything and saying, you know what, guys? We all believe in an ultimate reality. I want to make a joke like it's the voice of God.
God?
Are you there? Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. And so Sikhism is more going after, okay, like, we all just want to do really good things in the world. We all believe there's something more than us. We all want to do good. And they're also sort of, you know, they want to get out of this idea that we're not just a catch-all of everything. We are unique. Same as, like, in Islam, it's like, no, we're not just the baby of Christianity. We are our own thing. So that was the focus of these two papers, is that they are their own religious belief and tradition system. But they're so much younger. And I think we kind of, we brush them off. And I think that maybe they're grappling with some of the stuff that we've just said, okay, no, we've got it figured out. And they've revisited some of these ideas again. You guys know a lot about stuff. I'm so glad you just jumped in and were talking. And in the end, it was such a great class. I don't know if I could go back and do it again. I don't know that I would. I probably wouldn't. Take something genuinely easy. But it's really opened my eyes to a lot of things that I hadn't thought of before.
Oh, I was going to wait until your content.
Oh, I don't know. They're just sort of, they're spinning.
You didn't mention Falun Gong. You didn't mention...
No, I didn't. And it was sort of, it was branched into this whole, like, Taoist Confucianism, and then they were, like, other Asian religions. So...
See, the little bit that I know of Falun Gong, it's not a religion.
It seems to be just a movement, and it's relatively new. And when I looked at the basic precepts of Falun Gong, it's very much what based upon the Sermon on the Mount. Mm. Except that Jesus never enters into Falun Gong. And of course, there's meditation that is built into it. And it has no, from what I know, it has no rules. There's no hierarchy. It's just movement. Mm-hmm. To me, its due will come when it becomes a religion. But it's Falun Gong is really great.
So look at Falun Gong. Good. Indigenous religions. Look at everything again. Yeah. Why don't we sing some songs?
Sure. Oh, can I sing?
Yeah.
But to draw the circle completely, the thought just occurred to me that Falun Gong. Have to indigenous spirituality, you know, we'll call it indigenous.
Oh, maybe.
It's not based on the land, mm-hmm. but it's certainly based on very basic humanity and how we treat them. Mm-hmm. Without getting into all kinds of crazy rules and rituals and practices. Mm-hmm.
I think the good news, too, is that because there's so many people trying to figure out the same thing, like, we just don't have it figured out, you know, and I think that's great. I think it's great that we don't have it figured out, because then we have to keep working forever. And when we stop working, then that's...
Yeah. My favorite line is, trust those who are seeking, beware of those who find.
Yeah.